and former President Jacob Zuma's MK Party sabotage Parliament? How do MPs get their seats? How does the electoral system really work? These are among the burning questions we get answers from Dr. Michael Louis, the founder of the Independent Candidates Association. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Chris, and welcome, and thank you for inviting me again.
Michael, the Constitution says you have to have a maximum of 350 members of Parliament. MK threatens to boycott. They have 57 members. Will Parliament be able to be constituted?
Sure, Chris. I must actually say, when I saw that the MK got 57 seats, I really was worried. Because immediately I remembered the constitutional provision in Schedule 3 about the 350 seats that Parliament must be inaugurated. But luckily, in studying the Constitution again, I want to allay any fears that the Constitution in Schedule 3 very much pronounced that Parliament must sit 14 days after the election results has been proclamated. And as a result, at that event, which must take place whether there's a quorum or not, the President and the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker must be elected so that the President can be elected. And the nice thing about the Schedule 3, it talks about the absolute majority, which means that at a minimum, it really can be 201 of the 400. But when the voting takes place and people abstain or they don't, or they throw away their ballots or other their votes, it can go as low down as 167, which must be 50% of the 201. So I think that any boycott plans and things definitely won't work. We will see a election and a parliament sitting within 14 days from the 2nd of June.
Great news. How does the demarcation of seats for the National Assembly get allocated?
Well, look, I mean, the big thing is this election was different to any other election because it all was about three ballots this time, which wasn't in the previous election. Obviously, the one ballot is for our provinces, which is completely separate. But the whole aspect of two ballots really is confusing. And I think what really happened, why this question comes so much up to, say, the seat allocations. For instance, there's a regional ballot and a national ballot. And every time you just looked at the national board with all the national votes, and you see there a number of seats. But what they don't know, what the viewers don't know, is that the national ballots and the regional ballots need to be added together to make up your national average. So I'm just going to give a very simple example of how more or less it's allocated, but just principles and not too much on the figures, which I could obviously do, but because of limitation of time, I'm not going to do that. But the most important thing is, firstly, for the regional ballot. Maybe you could blame me for having a regional ballot because it had to come for the inclusion of the independent candidates, because the independent candidates couldn't be on a compensatory seat. And let me just explain that to your viewers why that is. Because in the debates in the standing committee, there was a lot of debate that an independent candidate is one person, can't be more than one person. So if there's a compensatory seat and an independent candidate gets 100,000 votes or 200,000 votes, it can't be allocated more than one seat. And as a result, there's going to be a lot of wasted seats. So that's why there was the regional ballot where they divided it into provinces so that the limitation of wasted votes is less. But also the whole question is independent candidates could never be on the compensatory seat. So they were only on the regional seat. And that's why we had to have the second ballot, which was the regional ballot or the first ballot, however they wanting to see it. So the principle is that how does the regional ballot actually work? The regional ballot is actually the only one that is complicated. Because to allocate the seats for the regional ballot, they took the number of registered voters in a region. So, for instance, the number of registered voters in the region for the Western Cape is exactly 2.1 million. 2.1 2.11 million was the allocation for the Western Cape out of the total population. And so you take that total number of registered voters in the Western Cape, divided that by the number of people in the country, and you will see that the number of the first 200 seats in the region will be allocated to the different provinces. So the Western Cape, for instance, only got 23 seats allocated to the 200 seats in Parliament. The Eastern Cape, 25, Free State, 11, KwaZulu-Natal, 41. So what the viewers must know is that the allocation of the 400 seats in National Parliament, already 200 is just allocated for the regions according to their registered voters. So that's how the number of allocations is. And so that's why, for instance, out of the 24 for the Western Cape, the DA, I think, got 14 of the 24. And that's how they got their seats, which is separate to the national, which we all saw on the board. Of course, then the region and the national get added together to get the allocation. So even in the region, what happened is that you have to work out what the total votes are that the DA got, as an example, in the region, as a quota to get to the number of votes. For instance, the DA in the Western Cape on the regional ballot, they got 1,056,072 votes in the Western Cape. So just over a million votes they got. The quota for the region of the Western Cape, which is the total of votes in the Western Cape in total, which was 2,000,005, the quota is 80,203 is the quota for the Western Cape. And if you divide the 1.56 million total votes in the Western Cape divided by the quota of 80,202 comes to 13.16 votes. And because the fractions then come up when they look at all the different qualifications of all the parties, the DA had a high fraction. And that's why they got 14 out of the 24 seats. So what I'm trying to say is you can see how complicated it is. The most important thing is that the viewer must see that the region is totally different to the national. And where in the past, what happened was very easy. We had 16 million voters going to the polls, and we divided it by 400. And then we looked up what the quota was around about 45,000. And you would see the number of seats that every political party got. So this time, you have to take the regional ballot plus the national ballot to get to the total. The national quota this time round, I worked it out just before this interview, was round about 79,642 votes made up one seat just on the national ballot. And so that's why if you looked at the DA, for instance, they got a much higher percentage regional votes than national votes. They got 3.5 million votes in the region. They got 3.4 million votes in the national ballot. As you know, we had two ballots nationally. Going to 6.9 million votes divided by the quota worked out to be 79,642 for one seat. So for the national, if you got round about 79,000 votes, you would have got your seat. And that's how they got their allocation of 42 seats nationally and regionally 45 seats. And that's why if you add them together, you get to the 87. And a lot of people said, but Michael, we see on the board there's only 42 seats for the DA. What they didn't do is added the regional votes to get to the 87. So I wish I could have made it easier, Chris. That's why I'm gray, because it's not easy. It's complicated. But I think that the most important that what the viewers must know is that the allocation of the national seats is regional plus national seats to get to a regional total. And that's why the independent candidates, by the way, didn't take part in this election. Well, only 11 did. But the reason why they didn't take part is because they couldn't take part in the compensatory seats, where two votes are added. So that's why we always said that political parties need to get an average of 50,000 votes and independents needed to get 80,000 because there was always one figure missing. And that's why they didn't take
part. Okay, now, what was the reason for the change of the electoral system and the introduction of a third ballot?
Well, exactly that, because the big thing is we always promoted that a independent candidate can only take part in an election if it's by virtue of one person standing up against another person. So it means we promoted by virtue of the private members' motion of Lakota that South Africa must be divided into constituencies. So because it's a more accountable system and that one person can stand up as an independent candidate, but a political party must nominate a person for that constituency to stand next door to or to contest against an independent candidate, because that's a fair system. And unfortunately, the minister did the easy option not to do that. And as a result, we haven't got a constituency-based system. Parliament compromised and said that we go into provinces and not constituencies. But it made it impossible for independent candidates to stand in a province. I'm not only talking financially, but I'm also talking about we could see that they really couldn't feature because of the size of the constituency that they had to fight.
Okay, now there has been a lot of dissatisfaction with the IEC results and the actual tally at the voter station. Would you like to comment on that, Michael?
Look, I think the big thing is that I really believe that the IEC is a bona fide organization and went a far way to exhibit a fair and free election. And definitely, I believe that the elections were fair and free. However, I'm really disappointed that particularly this time, because of the incorporation of the third ballot, there was definitely huge hiccups. People stood in long lines, and I don't believe technically they were equipped. More so, I think that the training on the ground of the electoral officers was really not that great. So there's a lot of discrepancies. I know of one particular person that said political party's got 100 discrepancies. But I really don't believe it's going to make such a big difference. If you would have looked at the tallies in the last week, you would have seen the percentages hardly change. So if there's a difference of 100 votes here and 100 votes there, and because of the division of the ballots, regional and national, I really don't believe it's going to make much of a difference. Although I think the expression of each vote is important, and I think it must be taken up with the IEC to try and see what the real results look like, because there must be human dignity and the importance of.
Michael, well, we'll soon know what the government is going to look like. In the meantime, can you explain for us what is the difference between a government of national unity and a minority government?
Well, the big thing is about a government of national unity is what we would term as a grand coalition. That's the incorporation of all the political parties on the playing field. And what happens with that is it's actually quite a more formal arrangement, because they will agree on certain very high-level items, like, for instance, constitutionalism, finance, the empowering, and what programs are they going to do to poverty alleviation and defense and some key issues. So that is a grand coalition. It's what we more or less saw in 1994. It's highly recommended because it's formalized. And there you're going to have the demarcation of the executive cabinet posts and legislative posts. The speaker, the deputy speaker, standing committees will be 100% divided amongst the participants. And I think what will happen if that's the decision the NEC will take today, is that there's going to be a threshold of the partakers of such a grand coalition. I don't think a political party with just one person will be invited back into a grand coalition. The minority government option is much more looser. And it's also a type of government that can work in the sense is that If, for instance, where the speculation is that the participants of a minority government is going to be the ANC, the DA, and the IFP, a minority government will try and make an arrangement where the executive will be in the hands of the ANC, and then all the DA and IFP will be demarcated, the speaker, deputy speaker, and all the standing committee chairpersons. The problem with that for me personally is, if I could express a personal opinion, is that I worked in an environment where there's a lot of conflict. And the big thing is, we need to see that we've got a government that can deliver and not play political powers. And I'm very afraid with that type of government that you'll see that the ANC will make policies, but they will be totally paralyzed because Parliament can't exercise what the policy directors are from cabinet. And I think you're inviting a bit of conflict, although there's definitely an increase of accountability. Because now what we had a problem with in the past government, the executive and the legislative weren't divided. You know, the executive would make a decision and they just give instructions to the legislature to exercise it. But now there's checks and balances in a minority government, which could definitely be an option. Although I think that all signs are definitely that it's a government of national unity, because it's more formalized, it's more inclusive, it's more engaging, and definitely the preferred option.
Michael, what are your biggest takeaways from our election results?
Chris, I think the biggest takeaway for me is, when I talk about a maturing democracy, is I would rather say the coming of age of our democracy, where we're now forced to dialogue, we're forced to engage, and we're really a great country, and we're at the abyss of just something really very special. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is that I'm really disappointed that the smaller parties didn't get more votes, because I've always been a proponent to have an electoral system with new faces, new voices, new ideas. And I'm definitely elated that the smaller giants, when I say smaller giants, the big giants with smaller votes, like Musi, like Mashaba, like Songhezo Zibi, all of them are on the playing field. They're definitely going to make a difference. My heart is definitely very sad that the independents didn't make it. I'm a huge fan of Zahi Ahmad. He's an activist of note, an incredible human being. He's been on the playing field for such a long time, and I really wish that the playing field is going to be more conducive for him to be there. And then the last thing, just the biggest takeaway. Never did I think that one man called our Honorable President Cyril Ramaphosa will win so much credibility within his last days of this political ambit, because he's definitely a man that we always knew he had statesmanship. He's a man that is known for engagement and dialogue. And I really want to end the season of the 2024 elections to see his statesmanship come up to full expression, and that we can see him usher in a new country where everybody is equal, and that one vote is equal to one seat, and that we can all have expression to make a magnificent country that we so deserve.
Michael, lastly, do you think the Electoral Act is constitutional? A panel has now been appointed to relook the Act. What system should they be thinking of introducing?
Sure. The way to end this interview, Chris, it's so sensitive, because the unfortunate thing is that our Electoral Act is not constitutional. There's many aspects of our Electoral Act that I still believe is not fitting, that one seat is equal to one vote. I think civil society did an outstanding process the last 6 years in trying to engage and dialogue to get the best Electoral Act that we can. But there's two reasons why I don't think it's still constitutional. I definitely think that we need a constituency-based system. that was promoted by Van Zyl Slabbert in 2004 already, the Zondo Commission, and Craig, that we so deserve. Do believe a constituency-based system is equal, because that's the only system that you're going to have a fair and just system for independent candidates. Because the one thing is, I had so many people asking me, do you think it was a waste of time to get independents onto the playing field? They don't understand that this is not about independent candidates. It's about an accountable, responsible electoral system that is fair, just, and equal, where we can nominate as the people our own direct electorate to elect our people. The second reason why it's not constitutional is, for instance, that political parties, when they vote in provinces, all their votes are tallied together to get their votes. The Electoral Act, unfortunately, when it comes to independent candidates and they stand in either the Western Cape, Gauteng, and a number of provinces, their votes won't be able to be tallied together, like with political parties, to get their actual demarcation of seats. And obviously, I'm very sad that in this election, only Louis Liebenberg had three provinces that he stood in, but it still wouldn't make a just tally to be able to take back to the Constitutional Court. But I'm wanting to say, to end, is that I'm so elated about the process that we've started. The power of active citizenry and of civil society. And the one thing from this interview that the viewers can write on their forehead, this is the last time that we're going to have three ballots. We will have four ballots in the next election. We will have constituency-based system, and we will take our power back and nominate our leaders to be more.
Thank you. That was Dr. Michael Louis, the founder of the Independent Candidates Association, explaining the complexities of South Africa's electoral system to BizNews. Thank you, Michael. I'm Christine.